listener production.
Okay, are you recording?
G'day team, you are listening to episode 156 of the Howie Games Part A with what must be said is a rather croaky intro. Sorry about that, probably caught too many games of footy on the weekend. Anyway, we push on. This episode features a man that dominated the AFL across 200 games for the Richmond Football Club, Alex Rance.
It ends with Blair. Rance, look at the desperation. Pumps it away. Rance is a fierce competitor. Got him in the tackle. He's playing a career game. He has been since, look, he gives him a start and runs straight past him to cut that off. Brilliant play.
Needs a bit more class to Rance. At the back, it's Ringwald. Fire.
Oh, torpedo inside 50. Rance ran it well.
Now, I should say right here at the start, Alex's life has many, many more chapters to it than simply footy. Alex is a really, really deep thinker. His head is full of all sorts of ideas, and the thing that I really enjoyed about talking to him is his ability and his want to challenge the norm. Alex gave the game away at the peak of his and his team's powers, but his explanation of why he pulled the pin on his career, I found it remarkable. Just like Alex, I guess, in many ways. But when I thought about it afterwards, when I really thought about what he said, about why he stopped playing, I moved past what he gave up and saw what he gained, which is the way Alex sees it.
So many lost and left behind, and no one seemed to care. Those who should seem like they're blind, pretending they're not there. Can't they see they hold the key? Could make things better if they try. Oh my Jaja, tell me why won't they open up their eyes?
Alex has started a school. Yeah, a school. I tell you, he's a remarkable man. It is called the Academy. You will hear about it in this episode. It's a different way to educate. More targeted, I guess you would say, to individual student needs, using sport to engage students across traditional learning pathways. But once again, when I thought about it, I could see lots of benefits. Check out theacademy.com.au as well as Academy Athlete, which is more athlete and football focused. Enjoy the story of Alex Rance, a bloke that gets stuff done. And you never know, Alex may just knock on your door one day, or will be revealed.
So when you search and then you find and know just where to go, and thought that once used to cloud your mind, you see clearly and now you know. Mystery, what is to be revealed in King Selassie I. Come on children, tread with me, we want to reach Mount Zion I.
Welcome to the Howie Games, a man that's a five-time All-Australian, premiership player from the Richmond Football Club, but he has done so much more than footy in life. He's built a school of all things, which we need to talk to him about. His name is Alex Rance, and he is an exceedingly good-looking man. Rancey, it is good to see you. How are you?
Thanks, Howie. I don't know what to take of that intro, but I'll just keep rolling with the punches.
Hey, I want to say to you right off the top, I generally come into a podcast with a fair idea. Oh, but actually, before that, what did you say to me just as we were walking in about one of your mates said to you?
He said, the Howie Games, they've done like Kelly Slater and some pretty big names. Well, what are you doing jumping on that podcast? And I guess that's what mates are for. Keep you grounded. But I like to think of myself as a pretty humble guy, and I'm honoured to be on your show.
Well, mate, we're stoked to have you. What I got partway through saying, and I said this to Das, normally I have a guest on, and there's no real structure to this, but I have a general idea in my head, the themes we're going to cover. I'll be honest with you, I have no idea, to the point where I actually rang a few people that you've been closely associated with football and said, what makes him tick? And they said, well, we can tell you about him as a footballer, but as a person away from football, we can't tell you too much because he's a reasonably private chap. And I was like, oh, holy moly, I'm not sure how this is going to go, Rancey. So the best way for me to start it, I think, is do you still watch footy? Are you still invested in footy? Do you watch the Tigers when they play this weekend, or is that then and this is now?
I still love football. It just has a different place in my life now. In answer to your question, yes. Like, I love watching the Bombers, and I love watching the Tigs, and I love watching my mate Richie Wallace play for the Dogs. And I've got a lot of love and an interest in the game still, but it's not as My world doesn't revolve around it. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, sorry, guys, I can't come out for dinner because the Tigers are playing. Like, now I feel like it has much more of a controlled place in my life.
Away from work in the academy, which I'm going to ask you about in a moment, what's your perfect day? Like, what are your interests? What are you doing? What are you into? Because a couple of people said to me, now, this man, Ranty, is a very creative style customer as well. What are you into?
I love keeping fit. So I love running with my dog and doing gym sessions and things like that. My perfect day at the moment would be up on the Gold Coast with my two nephews and my niece and my sister and my brother-in-law, and maybe going for a bit of a run with them in the morning, and then doing my brother-in-law, he has a great construction business and does a lot of cool things. And so just spitballing about life and how we can make things better and improve things and adapt things and, you know, just, you know, throwing common problems at each other and thinking, how can we make a solution of this? So, yeah, we're just always thinking about apps, inventions, business ideas and things like that. But it's usually surrounded around my family and that now.
You're a enigmatic type. You're an enigma, Ranty. No one, even when you were playing footy, no one quite knew what to make of you because you weren't, and I don't say this negatively or positively, you weren't the stereotypical footballer. And the people I've spoke to have said, yeah, he is definitely not the stereotypical footballer.
What would you say is a stereotypical footballer?
Completely 100% invested in the game. I was told you were 120% devoted to your best performance. I'll give you a perfect example. Actually, when you did your knee.
Rance is down. Yeah, he's not feeling great at the moment, Rance. Holding the right knee.
Yeah. That's not good. That's a worry.
I watched this clip back, and I actually wrote it down. I didn't think this would come up. What did you say here? The journo obviously said to you, as you're walking out of the old scanning place, this must be shattering. I didn't hear the question. Your answer was, I wouldn't say it's shattering. That's a little bit dramatic. It is what it is. There are injuries in footy all the time. I'm grateful that I had the life that I have and I've got people around me that I do. So that is a man that loves the game, but it's not his be all and end all. That's the general vibe I'm getting.
Probably pretty accurate, yeah. But I would say to that, I'm probably an extremist when it comes to if it is something that I love doing, I will push myself really hard to be successful at it. And I chose that to be football for a portion of time, but also it was a weird relationship that I had with football that kind of there was so much of it that I resonated with. But there was so much of it that conflicted with my inner self and best self as well. And I guess that's where the enigma comes from, that there was some consistencies where some people would be like, yeah, he must love the game. He has to have loved the game to be able to, you know, stay late at training and do extra reps and watch heaps of tape and recover from his knee the way that he did. But then there's other ways that's like, well, then why did he retire straight after? Like, that's where I think people don't understand. And probably a little bit as well why people just made up stories as well. Like, why people, because they don't understand and it's just hypothesizing and, oh, it must have been that he, you know, done something immoral within the footy club that he wants to leave. But that was not the case at all.
No.
It's just that I'd sort of reconciled the checks and balances of what I'd invested in the game. And I thought, well, now is probably time for me to just change tact. So I can see why the enigmatic tag goes on me, because for a long time I did feel quite conflicted with my footy career.
Well, we'll get to when you gave it away, but there's a lot to get through before that. I must stress that the people I spoke to said, when he was at the footy club, he was the most invested, engaged, hardworking footballer we had or teammate we had. So I don't want people to think you were half-assed at footy, because that's the opposite of the description I was given. But it was said to me there was other things in your life as well. So it's up to you, Ranty, how much you want to trust this conversation, I guess. What conflicts were there?
So when you think about... So What do you think? Give me the three best attributes that you think make up a great on-field player as an athlete, as a footballer, AFL footballer.
Skill, leadership, and probably courage, but I don't know if they're too cliched.
Where do you think aggression rates into that, like competitiveness, grit?
Probably above them all. Probably above, from what I've learned on this podcast, probably at the top of the tree, I think I would say. Those that seem to be the most competitive, therefore the most aggressive, are typically the most successful.
Yeah, like our game is a contested game.
Yep.
That we play, and courage falls underneath that competitive element, and leadership falls under that competitive element.
Like, yep.
And leadership is obviously, it manifests itself in a different lens in the business world and in the family life and things like that. But for the game of football, I found for me to be the best, like I'll give you example of, so my mental cues for my mental peak performance were proactive, dominant, and physical.
Mm.
Three things. So when you think about two of those, so proactive, fine. Yep, no worries. You can do that in life. You know, you can think forward ahead of making your partner some dinner and cleaning the house, and that's proactive. That's great. That's fantastic. But if you are a dominant in your family life, it's not going to lend too well to some relationships, is it?
No.
What about physical? What if you manifest that in your family life? What's that going to look like?
I understand.
So to be successful on the football field, I had to be those three things. And that's what made me as a player. And if you think about me versus any of the big players that I played on, I took the dangerous space. I was physical. I used my body because I wasn't as tall as some of these other guys. So I had to be proactive. I had to be physical and I had to be dominant. So then how do you switch that off? And how do you then go into the change room and you got to calm that down? And there was plenty of times where I got it wrong with my leadership, that I couldn't be those people. I needed to be loving, empathetic, caring, still probably proactive to get on the front foot, to support things. So that's where the conflict lay with me, is that on field I had to be this beast, this dominant person that made someone else's day worse. But then when I come off the field, I want to make your day better. I want to make your life better. So then how do you switch them on and off? And that's what made it hard for me.
Mate, it's a fantastic explanation. We had on a Friday night football show I do on Triple M, Travis Cloak, on last week. And I talked to him that he was very reluctant to speak on the media. And when I was in the rooms, you were reluctant to go and ask him because you knew he was this big, bad guy. And he said, oh, well, I don't want to paraphrase him, but he was living a different life. He was living not who he was for his entire career because he was seen as this big, strong poster boy, alpha male. And he said that's the opposite person he was. And eventually it ground him down. We're speaking to Trav Cloak on the Friday Huddle. It's a really good point, Trav. You played for the biggest club in the land. You had some tremendous highs and tremendous lows. But you sound so relaxed now. Sometimes you didn't come across that way when you were playing footy. Is this the real you, and did you sort of have to change yourself for that 15 years?
Oh, definitely. When I pulled that jumper on, mate, I was meant to be this Hulk and impersonator that I had to be really strong and aggressive, and off-field, that's not me. For many years, I battled with it, and to be honest, that was probably the reason that pulled me down at the end of my career at the Pies.
How did you go with this conflict? How did you manage it? Obviously, it manifested eventually you're stepping away from the game, and we'll get to that. But was it a week-to-week thing that you had to think about, or month-to-month, or end of the season? How did you go about dealing with it?
You just mask it. Like, you just find other ways to mask it. So you reward yourself for that person. So stats, votes, medals, awards, all that kind of stuff on field, you reward that. So it's okay, yeah, that's a good part that's necessary, rather than saying, like, I feel really bad about punching that person or getting reported for this thing or you know, crossing the line on the field when I probably shouldn't have. So you reward yourself and you mask it. You just look at the good rather than the damage that you've done. But then also you probably overdo the other side. So like I spent heaps longer at the footy club investing in relationships to make sure everyone was okay. I went on the footy show and postcards and things like that to make people laugh, to make people happy. Again, a mask to overdo the guilt that maybe I felt for being so dominant and physical on the other side.
Wow.
So, and again, like I haven't done a heap of sort of psychological work in breaking this down. This is kind of just what I've summed up over the course of it. But we all put masks on in some way for things that we're not exactly happy with in our lives. And I think it was my on-field, you know, probably pursuit of fame, pursuit of dominance, pursuit of wealth, things like that, that I felt guilty for, that I then tried to mask over with, you know, doing all these other funny things to make people laugh and to make people feel like, oh, actually, no, he's not a money-hungry, ego-driven, physically violent person.
Mm.
So that's, yeah, maybe that sums it up in a little bit of a nutshell, but
it does. I have no area of expertise in psychology, etc. But the obvious question to me, therefore, is how do you keep track of who the real Alex Rance is when you're these different people, two different people?
It's a great question, and it's probably something that I battled with for a long time. I was like, why do people like me? Like, why do people associate with me and call me their friend? And the footy world is very fickle too. Like, you're only loved for as good a game as you play for a lot of the time. And as long as you're in the spotlight, people want to talk to you and people want to give you endorsement deals and things like that. And so it can be quite fickle. So when you're young, you just conform to that. You're like, okay, this is the person you need me to be. That's the person I'm going to be. And that, if that's what gets me money, and if that's what gets me a game, if that's what gets me, because I came in a time where coach tells you to do something and you do it. You say how high, and you probably add 20% onto it just to make sure that they know you've done it. Whether it was a moral thing or not, whether it was within the rules or not. And so it was challenging to sort of constantly second guess, is it the off-field guy who's caring, supportive, loving, funny, prankster team man that you love, or do you just love me because I can win you games and because I can stop a forward and because I can be aggressive and dominant and physical? So it was a constant dilemma for me. And you do see, and I can probably speak for a lot of retired footballers, a relatively high attrition rate of associates from football. You've got 40 friends who you're hanging out with all the time. We're going to be best friends for life. We see it with school as well, don't we? Like,
we do.
We think about year 12, like friends forever.
Yeah,
and that's why they sung that song. Who sung that? Like TLC or something like that.
Yes, nice, man. Nice.
So, you know, something like that. And then when, you know, 3-6 months goes along and you've only heard from 3 or 4 guys, you're like, oh, I mustn't have been the best friend, would I? But you have to challenge those thoughts too, because they're not real. Everyone just has really busy lives. Like, we don't really talk to all 20 of our close friends from graduating high school with.
No.
But it does bring up those thoughts of what was I valued for, and what makes me a good person. And so that's been an interesting little journey for me over the last few years on redefining my priorities and what I believe makes me a good person to my family, from a spiritual standpoint, from a lot of standpoints.
The academy, extraordinary. And the academy athlete, I watch videos, I looked at your website, and I read about it. And the basic, and in a moment, I'll get you to explain to me what the academy is. But the basic premise from my understanding was that education traditionally has been one size fits all, and you were trying to provide an alternative style of education.
And I want to preface this with the fact that I don't want to come out here slamming schools, because I think they do the best with what they've got. The education system, I feel like, is there needs to be rigor around it to say, you know, this is what an education is. You know, you need to be able to do X,
yep,
Y, Z from a numeracy standpoint, a literacy standpoint, and so on. There needs to be rigor. But at the same time, it's very challenging to get 25 people in a room that all have the same passion to engage in content. So, you know, you and I, we might both really like pour over the Essendon supplement scandal. Let's just pull that apart and talk about all the social dilemmas associated with that, the impacts on mental health, the impacts on what is due diligence and what is trust in people of authority, things like that. You know, that's a great text to talk about for people who love sport and,
yes,
football. But imagine someone who loves Shakespeare and theatre, they're just like, oh, that footy chat is just really not my jam. But we're sort of we're bound to a curriculum at a school which sort of ties you to that text or ties you to that sort of learning style. So my thought was that wouldn't it be nice if there was more passion-based schools where everything that you're learning is aligned to that passion? And we'll use football as the example that every kid when they're probably 12 to 16 wants to play AFL. Oh, sorry, not every kid.
Every kid that plays football. Every boy and girl that plays football, just like every kid that plays cricket, boy or girl, wants to play for Australia.
At the highest level.
Absolutely.
And so over time, you start to realise, maybe that's not going to be a reality, but maybe I want to be involved as a statistician or a physio or S&C coach or a dietitian or
commentator,
marketing, sales. I might want to be the CEO of a footy club one day. There's so many different things that surround footy clubs over and above just being the player. And so imagine if that was the same case for theatre. You know, well, everyone probably wants to, actually, this is probably a bit of a generalization, but maybe some people want to be in the spotlight. They want to be the actor at mm-hmm. the center. They want to be the hero. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people want to be the script writer, the scene producer. There's so many different elements that go into a passion field, but the hero is the one that gets put on the pedestal, the player, the lead act. So imagine if there was education organizations that were based around your passion. Like think about e-games for a second. Like how many kids waste so much time on gaming? Why do they love doing it? Because there's a social side to it, but there's also a competitive side to it. What if you trained as well for e-games as you did for a professional cricketer or a footballer, but you made a school around that where actually I love the coding side of it. I love the sales side of it. I love the involvement with professional athletes. Like you can see how by putting your passion at the center of an education, you can actually create some really cool things off the back of it. So that was the genesis of the academy, that obviously I know football and I know the pathway that it gets to that it takes to get there. But I did a calculation that 74 players were delisted in my career at Richmond. 74 players from when I got there at the end of 2007 to the end of 2019.
Wow.
So not all of them, and this is going to sound very privileged, but we get paid very well, or I did get paid very well as a footballer, but it's not life-changing money. Like, you might own your house at the end of it, which for some people is life-changing, but you're still going to have a job. You're not going to be like LeBron James where you can just retire on a beach in Miami. Like,
yes.
So if you don't have a plan B, there's some problems there. So if you think about the 74 players that got delisted in the time that I was playing, how many of them went on to either be a coach or in the media? Which is usually most players' sort of plan B,
yeah.
If they've had sort of a career. Not many.
No.
So are they doing meaningful jobs? Are they satisfied? Are they just living paycheck to paycheck to then maybe make a bit of cash on the weekend playing for some country league footy team and then just sinking some cans to sort of push down the feelings of inadequacy that they felt because they were delisted? What if before that time they had a better understanding of why they were actually playing the game? Is it because you love being physically fit, being outside, the competitive environment, the money, whatever it might be? Then you can say, well, actually, here's a really good plan B. I love being physically fit and outside. So if football doesn't work out for me, maybe a landscaper would be a great idea or a trade or something like that. But if I like maybe more the statistics side of it and the more the analytical side, maybe this is a plan B for me. So you can see by breaking down the passion in itself, why you do what you do, and having a deeper understanding, it can lead. You're rarely going to fail. You can probably take a step left or right, but you're not going to go backwards, which I think a lot of players do when they finish the game. They go backwards, and it's like, I've got to start again. So that was the genesis of the academy.
So you've got the academy, and then you've got the academy athlete, which is more on the physical side of things and a bit more specific and training, and people need to check out the website. They can see exactly what's going on. But we'll come back to your school. How do you start a school? So the academy is for year 11 and 12 boys.
Yep.
You're a bloke that's come out of football. How do you start a school?
With smart people around me.
Okay.
Good people.
Always a good starting
Always
point.
Always a good start. Be the dumbest man in the room. and that I'm that very regularly, and I say a lot of silly things. But I think my strength is questioning everything and also trying to have the humility to not always think you have the best answer. So, yeah, I surrounded myself with really good people. You start off with good education partners. At the moment, we have two education partners who we write all the curriculum. So we write what's there to be delivered. We make sure it maps all across to all the learning outcomes and learning criteria. So we can't just sort of pull it out of the sky that we want to say, oh, yeah, we're going to teach you this. It needs to map across. And then, yeah, we hire the right teachers to make sure that they align with the passion of the school as well. Like, you don't want to hire a drama teacher to teach at a footy school.
Yep.
So yeah, there's various different boxes that you need to work through. It's like anything. You just got to start.
How did you get your first student? Like, what day one of the school?
Yeah.
How many dudes were there?
13 was in our first class.
13.
So at Essendon, we had 13 in our first class.
And do you reckon, looking back, that their parents and them were taking a punt, or they'd heard you speak, so they thought this is us? Like, how did they turn up that day? It's a big thing to change schools.
100%, yeah. It's a good question, because I think families come to the academy for different reasons. There's the obvious, so now we're established, there's the obvious simulated AFL environment.
Yes.
That there's the, we've got sprint tech, recovery, strength and conditioning programs, skills and drills, all weaved into our program, and they're very much intertwined with the curriculum. It's not just sort of like, here's your footy program, and we're just doing math, English, chemistry, biology on the side as well. Like, they're very much intertwined. So I'll give you an example of our numeracy just quickly. So we might study, running patterns in the game of AFL, or we might study different energy systems, so aerobic, anaerobic, something like that. Then we'll chuck a GPS on, go out, we'll do our conditioning session or skills session, we'll come back in and we'll break down the data. So what's the average speed we're running, our standard deviation?
That's your mathematics,
what are the average
component.
So that's our maths component, which is
cool, Rance.
Bespoke to what we're doing. Same as numerous literacy. You know, we talked about the Essendon supplement scandal. We study that. We study the Adam Goods doco. How does it make you feel? Imagine if you were Goodsy. Imagine, like, oh, talking about, we don't know, it doesn't always have to be Shakespeare to say, construct a opinion piece on this, and then let's compare and contrast, and let's talk about how this person feels about it. Why is it different? Are they right? Well, it's their opinion, so they're of course right.
Back to Alex in a tick. Next up on the show, not quite sure at this exact moment, to be fair, either, an international who has forged a path in Australia, a multi-sport superstar, or a media type with a story of incredible courage, or Tiger. To be fair, I don't think it's going to be Tiger. Anyway, all will be revealed next Thursday. Back to Alex. I'll get back to school and footy in a moment. I rarely voice my opinion on this podcast because it's about the guest, Rancy. I've wandered into the educational space a couple of times, and all the wonderful, hardworking teachers out there invariably get in touch. From my experience, and I can only judge it on my experience, I've got a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I say this is only my experience, that when they were going through their primary school years, there seems to be a lot of discussion about resilience and how important resilience is, but no practical application. And the kids are shielded from learning any resilience because the red pen never comes out.
Everyone gets a participation.
Everyone gets a medal. How does, and as I say, I've got tremendous, and we've all got even more respect for teachers after what happened with COVID, because we did it ourselves and it was bloody hard work.
Yeah.
And we all thought, wow, teachers are underpaid and undervalued. So I want to preface it by saying that. How do you go? If you're moving into the football industry, it is a brutal industry. You've talked about your mates getting shipped off out the door, and what are they doing now? Where do you sit on this, and how do you go about teaching kids that they will apply for jobs they won't get, and that they will not win everything, and they'll have to come up against it, where the education system at the moment, I'm not sure it's providing those knockbacks.
Mm. It's a great question. I don't think
it's a rather lengthy one, wasn't it?
No, it's a very, very good question, and it's given me a good portion of time to think about my response. I think anything in life, when it comes to resilience, it always comes down to the carrot or the stick. But like, if you're going to do something for a sustained period of time, even though it's challenging, it needs to have significant carrots attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Money, fame, title, friends, whatever. If there's too much, but also you need a bit of a stick sometimes too, because we're not always like to get you to move on, because you're not, the stimulus needs to change every now and then, that sometimes the carrot, sometimes it's the stick. If you overdo one, then it becomes less effective. So when it comes to the goal of resilience, I think the same rule applies, that at the moment, just a lot of carrot that let's just incentivize. You get anything for doing anything, but there needs to be a balance of the stick.
A lot of carrot.
So, but then it's also reassuring after, and like, I don't have any kids, but I've seen with my nephews and nieces, reinforcement of value, and that just because this is the boundary that I'm setting, this firm boundary, and this is what's acceptable and what's not, doesn't make me love you any less.
No.
It doesn't make you less of a person. That if you fail this test, this you know, literacy and numeracy, if you come last in this running event, that doesn't make you a bad person. That just means that you need to improve your running. It means you need to improve your literacy, your numeracy, and it gives you a point to keep moving forward. And that's how we build resilience and improve.
Yes.
And I think going back to my football career, you need to de-identify performance with person. Like, just because I played a good game of football doesn't make me a good person. That I can get 3 Brownlow votes on the weekend and then go and punch someone at a pub, but that's okay because I played a good game, so that's acceptable.
Mm.
Like, who you are as a person should be separated from outcomes and results. They're not always the same thing.
So what were you into at school?
I was actually not a bad student. I was pretty lazy. I was really creative. I was a bit of a... So I went to a music and art school for my first 10 years. So,
right. So this is when I said I don't... No one knows much about you. Tell me about your music and art. We had Nick Revolt on this show recently.
Yeah.
And we talked for half an hour about books.
Yeah.
And it was one of my favourite parts of a podcast I've done for a long time. Tell me about you and music and the creative side of arts.
Yeah.
Because Richmond supporters will listen to this and they'll think, oh, right. Didn't know that.
Yeah. But that makes sense with why he's there. And then the pieces start to fall into place.
Well, that's the idea of what we're doing here.
Yeah. So let's go back. What have we got? Some of my earliest memories, like I just loved in primary school learning about like Egypt and Vikings and adventure. And I was always, you know, I would be the protagonist in those things. I would always, you know, wear the Viking helmet and, you know, put on. And I think it probably ties into my mum, and because as Jehovah's Witnesses, we never celebrated birthdays and we didn't do Christmas. So to sort of show that that's okay, my mum would always put on different sort of events, and there would always be like treasure hunts and like dress up parties, and like, I was forever like a different Disney character or something like that. And so I really enjoyed that, you know, public speaking, theatrical element of school. And then that sort of, it worked to a certain point up until, you know, year 7, year 8, year 9. And then I loved athletics and sport and swimming and triathlons and volleyball and golf and different things like that. And I found that this school that I was at, I was like, these guys suck. Like, they're just losing everything. Like, I have to do every single event, and the only points we're getting is when I'm doing it.
You're one-man show.
What am I doing here? And I remember the one teacher I had, Mr. Pitt, who was our PE teacher, and he played at Swan Districts. So the waffle side Swan Districts at the time, because I'm from Western Australia. And I was just like so connected with him. I was like this, and Mr. Ford, he was my year 2 teacher. He was just, remember he drove this like Jeep Wrangler, this black Jeep Wrangler. I was like, this guy's the man. Like, he's so cool. Like, he gets it. But every other teacher, I was just like, no chance. This is in primary school up until year 10. So loved the theater and art side of things. Always did public speaking, always, you know, English I was quite good at just because I could bluff my way through it, not because I had any sort of backbone around.
So are we talking school plays and that type of thing?
I think, yeah. So I was, mum's got this photo of me like as a this was like this Australian. I did ballet up until year six or something.
You did ballet?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So, and there's this photo of like, it was like this Australian ballet theatre thing. So I was like dressed up as a shearer with like my ballet kit on, and there's all these like the girls in their sheep outfits, and it was shocking for stereotyping. All the girls were sheep, all the guys were shearers. So right. I'd be blown out the window.
It would.
But yeah, like that kind of stuff. I remember I did choir for a little while, but that was mainly just because I was chasing a bird at the time who was in the choir.
What's your singing voice like?
I actually don't mind my singing voice, okay. But I'm not sure if anyone else likes it. But so that's kind of in a rambling sort of way what I enjoyed it. And then year 11 and 12, I moved to like a St. Kevin's or a Halebury, it was a all boys school.
Guildford?
With Guildford Grammar, So it had like a really good football program. And I was like, yeah, this is me. Like I found my tribe. Like, because I still found like creative, arty people, but they like dominated at sport too. And I was like, yeah, this is my family. Like this is my tribe who I know.
And Western Australia being Perth being a relatively small place compared to, hello to all our West Australian viewers, love Perth, spent time living in Perth, but compared to the East Coast cities, a little bit more insular, and due to the geographical location, probably a little bit more closed from the rest of the country. Did you get much of, he's Murray Rance's son? He's going to be a footballer or not?
Across to Baxter. Baxter chips the ball in towards centre-half forward. Over the hands of Pack. Rance picked up, fires the goal. And he's kicked it. Rich Footscray's seventh goal. 7-5-47. Richmond 4-1.
A little bit, but it was not in just regular life. It was just more as I sort of started to go up, and because we played for Swan Districts as well, so my dad played in Three Flags over there for Swan Districts, and so I reckon I got selected in teams probably just because of my dad's name at start.
Like,
it was good, gave me a leg up. It was a good lesson in life. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Got that leg up, and I was trash, like 14s, 15s, 16s. I made the state team for Western Australia, but still like was pretty embarrassing. But then it was like 17, 18 that everything started to go a bit better. It was almost when I went to Guildford that things started to go on the up and up.
Did you get to watch him play?
No, never. Nah. So Dad retired. He never actually played in the West Australian, the West Coast Premiership. So he was the second captain of West Coast. And he retired, I think, in 89. And I was born in 89. So
you come over here. Let me get the years right here. 2008, the 18th pick for Richmond. And at this stage, you're not playing the VFL. You're playing for Coburg. So you're two levels below the AFL side at this stage?
So Coburg were our affiliate at the time. Right. So, but you're right, I was playing VFL reserves.
Right, so you're playing VFL reserves.
That doesn't exist anymore.
No, right, so they've got rid of that. So how prepared was this footballer, creative cat that rolled in from Perth to roll into a football club that was starved of success at Punt Road, and is a very different place then, I imagine, to how it is now, Rancy. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was not. I didn't fit in very well to start.
Why?
Because the theatrical side of me was like I just didn't understand hierarchy and like the footy hierarchy, and I think that's probably what made Jack Trent and myself and Grimesy and Dave good leaders at the back end, is because we didn't believe in that hierarchy.
Who was coach at this stage?
So that was Terry Wallace.
Okay.
And I love Player. I've only had a few years with him, and he was fantastic to me. But it was just the sign of the times. Like, that's just what it was.
So the hierarchy as in do what you're told hierarchy, or?
Do what you're told, and if you're, like, in a meeting, your senior guys are the only ones that talk.
Okay. Would you ever pipe up or not?
Yeah, all the time.
Right, and how'd that go down?
Lead balloons.
Right.
Yeah, not great.
So the stereotype would be the senior blokes look at you and say, who's this young punk, why hasn't he shut his trap?
Yeah, tell this kid to shut up and earn his straps, yeah.
Okay.
And
but you pushed on.
Yeah, push on, yeah. I'm a peacock, you got to let me fly.
I'm a peacock, you've got to let me. I think when we put the banner of this podcast, it'll be Alex Rance, I'm a peacock, let me fly.
Yeah. it was, yeah, and I think the only thing that got me through was that every preseason, I was like top five in everything. Like, I would try my backside off in everything, whether it was time trials or sprints or, like, there's this, and it's not a myth, it's just a story that actually happened where Richo, it was like, it might have even been a captain's run or something, and I'm, like, yelling at Richo to get through the cone, and he's like, pal, I'm like the best player Richmond's ever seen. Like, yeah, but and Richo didn't say that because he's the most humble man I've ever met. But like, I could just see his like brain. He's like, who is this kid? Like, yeah, I get it. You're like super fit and you try really hard, but like, you just don't get this space. Like, you don't get what footy clubs are about. And like, yeah, I just remember being a bit of a misfit. That I sort of more fit with the guys that were sort of playing VFL 2s and all that kind of stuff. But I had the leadership qualities of a senior player. I just didn't have the skills to back it up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it just took me time to find my place.
So I would imagine setting up a school culture is very important. So you get to Richmond in 2008. You play your first game in 2009 against Geelong, 18 touches, 6 marks. Very nice start by you. Well done, Rancey. But in 2009... I'm looking at the placings here. Tigers win 5 games in 2009. 2010, you win 6 games. 2011, you win 8 games. 2012, you win 10 games. So it's a struggle. How, we'll get to what the culture became, but, and I know, and this is not to denigrate who was in charge or who was at the place, but you've seen both. You've seen the good and the not successful on the field. How was Richmond at that stage when you're winning 5-6 games as a organisation?
I'm probably not qualified to comment too much on that. I can tell you how it made me feel, okay. but I can't really tell you what leadership looked like from a football club standpoint, which I had a greater insight into later on in my career. It just felt like a really serious place. Like, it felt like such a pressure-filled, cutthroat, perform or get sacked
right.
sort of environment. Everyone was talking about, like, contracts and how long they had left and in fear of getting sacked.
Yes.
Like, it was almost when you're in a successful club, contracts are just sort of like, oh, yeah, no worries, shorty, just got a new 5-year contract, sweet, no problems. Like, they just sort of happen. But when you're, I think, at an unsuccessful, everyone's talking about what can we get for this player? Like, look at everyone just trying to pull apart West Coast right now. And you know, what could we get for McGovern and Darling? And no one wants to get it, like, buy out Nick Natanui because he's got too much on his contract. Like, it becomes quite carnivorous. And I think I found that that I was trying to be this sort of, like, bubbly, energetic, like, positive, anything could happen. We could make finals every year into this environment that was just kind of like squash, like, you know, your place. Like, let's just focus on surviving rather than thriving. But that's just how I felt. And I was probably, I'm not in any position to say that it was leadership's fault or.
No, I get that.
But I think a big turning point to that was like Chris Newman coming in, and because maybe where he came from in that he wasn't a high draft pick, he did have to fight his way into the side and had a really long, wonderful career built on courage and built on selflessness and things like that, that almost became the norm, and that became like understanding, and it's sort of like, okay, now we're starting to get emotionally connected. And then he handed that over to Koch in a really good way, and Koch sort of kept passing on the vulnerability torch, and then it became like, yeah, we all can belong here. We all can succeed. And then that's when I think things started to go really well.
We'll get to the vulnerability torch, as you call it. It's a great description. I think this is off your Wikipedia page. So in 2010, it says this about you as a footy player. To that point, Rance had shown plenty of athletic talent, but for far more brain fades and failed plays. And your coach jokingly said, he termed it Alex Rance moments. A defender would perform some sort of incredible feat, winning a seemingly unwinnable one-on-one contest before making a questionable decision with ball in hand and turning it over. And I think when Dimmer got there, he jokingly said, I'd trade him for a six-pack.
Mm.
How did you become that athletically gifted bloke? And I used to sit down the boundary and think, God, look at this bloke. And then I can't play football. So I'm only reading the descriptions here, Rancey,
mm.
and then run out of halfback and just chop it and turn it over and go back over your head the other way? How did you become from that to what your coach went on and said is the fullback of the century?
And then you got the fullback of the century in Alex, which, you know, he just marvels at what he can do and how he can win the ball and start our offence from there as well. So I'm very lucky. That
and won five All-Australians and is regarded as Lee Matthews, I think you called you the greatest defender of the modern era. Now, when Lee Matthews speaks, that's when I start to listen and think, wow. So was that through hard work or was it through coaching? How did you make that amazing transformation?
Definitely through coaching. Like I'm not blind to see the work. So Leper made me the player. Like
Justin Lepich.
Justin Lepich gave me the skill set to be to survive and then to build on. So he gave me the foundation, and Ben Rutten fixed my brain, like fixed my footy brain.
What was wrong with it?
Well, it sort of lends itself to the creativity chat that we talked about before. So from a defensive standpoint, it was pretty good because I could sort of, in my mind, I could project, okay, I think this is what's going to happen. Like here's like three scenarios, which I reckon are going to happen. That one's less likely. That one's definitely not an option now. It's one of two now. Okay, sweet. And then I would go and sort of intercept the ball or to peel off my bloke or something like that. So it was great when the game was quite static in defense and I was reading the play and I had a reference point. On offense, when your brain is going, here's an option I could hit, there's an option I could hit, there's one, look at that, that calls out, there's a supporter in the stands, how good, we're up by 15 points. Like, that's hard to make a good decision.
Okay.
And so a brain fade is like, it's a good way to put it because it's almost like brain overload and it's just like, like just shut down, gone. Like,
right.
Poor decision because it's overstimulated. So I just had to then, when I got it, just stop, don't run. Don't run because you can't run and make a decision at the same time. It's like Zoolander. I could only turn left. Like, you can only do one thing at once. Like you're either running or you're kicking. One of the two. You're not doing both at the same time. And so I just had to simplify that. And then over time, I started to work things out and build on that. But, yeah, it was just trying to do too much at once. And I would see these guys like Dusty and Shedder, Shane Edwards, and who else was there that were just amazing decision makers. And Koch was a beautiful kick. Jordy McMahon at the time, he was a great kick. And I was like, I can do that. I can try that. No, I can't. Like, yes, I can put the ball from my hand to my foot, but it doesn't look the way they do. And they can see things that I can't. So it was just an acknowledgement of skill set that I needed to just go, all right, let's pump the brakes. And then it wasn't that I was making more good decisions. It was just I was making less poor ones.
Yeah.
So.
One of your teammates said that you may not remember this. As I said, I rang quite a few people, which I don't typically do because I thought, well, I just don't know much about this dude. So I'm glad how open you're being. It talked about a training session where no marks would be paid. So you had to play on.
Yeah.
Is this ringing a bell with you?
It's a great story, yeah.
Well, you might as well tell it rather than
no,
me.
No, yeah, I want to hear, because it's. I'm trying to work out who's your source here on this one as well. Talk to me.
Okay. I much prefer the guest to tell the story, but let me have it. I'm not going to show you who this came from, but now here we go. One day, Dimmer sent him off the track because we were doing a drill that was about playing fast and there were no marks being paid. Rancey took a mark and forgot about the rule and got tackled. He spatted at Dimmer and then basically got red carded off the track.
Yeah. So from then on, Dimmer had cards. Like he literally every training said he would have cards and he's like, Rancey, I'm gonna card you again. If you keep this up, you're gonna get carded. So it was like at the time I was dead serious though. I was like, you've gotta be kidding me. Like, what are we learning from this? Like, this is so like I was just overdoing it, like complete just like turbo mode. So yeah, I had to leave the track, sit on the bench for a little bit to cool down. Because like, and Dimmer is as everyone has seen, is an amazing coach. But I also, I think he probably enjoyed the fact that I challenged and sort of didn't just do exactly what he said. Like there was plenty of times on field where Dimmer would say, this is the start, this is what I want you to do. And I would say, okay, with respect, I'm just going to do this anyway. And then it was a great relationship that he still allowed me to have the freedom and creativity. But also he would come down pretty hard. It's like, I told you to do that and it didn't come off. But also he probably learned a few things as well by allowing me to be a bit freer. So yeah, that was very funny, that training session, because I went crazy. Like I was like, we had this, like, and the reason why he carted me and sent me off is because I just kept going with it like a dog with a bone. I was like, but how are we learning this, Dimmer? Seriously, how are we supposed to get a disposal away when you're not paying any marks? They're straight on our head. He's like, Alex, get off. And everyone's like just standing there like, what the heck is going on here? This guy's a nut. So
I must say, I did speak to him. And he could not have been more glowing about you. But the thing that tickled my fancy, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this, was I rang him on the way up. I teed it up to have a chat with him. And he's like, I'd love to chat to you about Alex. And he was in the car with Alistair Clarkson. And I did say to them, please tell me you guys are driving around Melbourne with between you your 7 premiership medallions on. But they weren't. But they thought, oh, we might have a crack at that. I couldn't believe they were both in the car.
Just in the glove box, yeah, just in case they get pulled over by a cop. Just like, will you take this instead?
How about 6 more of these? That is the end of Alex Rance Part A. Part B awaits.
Listener.